All right, are you guys there now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome.
You there, Billy?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, can you hear us good?
I hear you great. Yeah, you bet.
Cool. So, yeah, Derek said we're getting together to talk about sales process, and so happy to do that.
Yeah, you know, I tried to network with some of the guys while I was there, but, you know, pretty packed schedule. I feel like I'm operating very inefficiently, generally speaking. And I kept hearing process, meaning from when the lead comes in to what to do next, document and CRM, you know, I want to deploy a cookie cutter predictable process. And I'm kind of new to the annuity only business. And so I got to believe that some of your agents are process driven. And I just want to mimic that, you know, but not overcomplicated, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So that's kind of, I was asking Derek about that. He thought it'd be a good idea for us to come together and just chat about that. And, you know, it's my own darn fault because I'm somewhat disorganized, and I'll be the first to admit it. But, you know, just, you know, wrestling my way through it, I'm able to make a living. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this. So when I teach sales process, I don't teach too much of the nuance, right? Because the nuance is important, but the nuance is very variable. The nuance responds to the client based on the uniqueness of the client. But the sales process structure can be the same for every single client. And so that's what I focus on the most, because that gets you 80% of the way there. It has the biggest impact on your business. The more frequent you apply that process, the better you'll get with the nuance. You know, everything from body language to knowing when to shut up to, you know, having good objection handles and things like that. You know, what kind of coffee you put in the coffee machine in your office, if you have one, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, that's why I developed the 5-step sales process. So have you studied that?
I have.
Okay.
I don't have it into memory though, honestly.
Okay. So when you meet with someone, do you do a full comprehensive fact finder?
Not every time.
Okay.
And I actually, what I have been doing is when I have an interested prospect, depending on what I can glean from that initial discussion, sometimes I ask them, look, Mr. Jones, I'd like to do a comprehensive fact find to fully understand your situation. But then I give them an out, and sometimes I let them, you know, but if you kind of have some funds earmarked that you want to put into safe money, I give them the out, and maybe I shouldn't do that. You know what I mean? We can
right.
We can not do
when
that.
When you go to an accountant, does he get all of your tax information or just some of it?
No, you're right. All of it, for sure.
When you go to your doctor, does he run all the tests that he needs to run for your heart condition, or does he just run some of them?
Yeah. Well,
if you wanted an architect to build a building, would you just tell him how you want some of it to look?
Nope.
Yeah. We're professionals of a trade. And just like any professional of a trade, you have to collect enough information. You know, if you're a structural engineer, for example, you know, you have an amount of information you need to collect to be able to stamp those drawings and say, yes, this thing is structurally sound.
Okay.
If a client Now, take any of those professions. If I went to my accountant and I said, yeah, please do my taxes, but yeah, I have a few 1099s I really don't want you to see, so I'm not going to give those to you. What do you think you would do?
Walk out.
He's going to say, you give me the 1099s or I'm not going to do your taxes, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I have no why. I have no reason. I just don't know why this is such a problem, but it is. And I'm saying that from the standpoint of we all struggle with it. We've all struggled with it to some extent. In other words, we don't respect ourselves and our profession to the degree that we need to do our jobs and to demand from our prospects and clients what we need to get to do our jobs and why our clients don't see us in light of the importance of the decisions we're helping them make and why they're resistant to provide us that information. It's okay. one of the biggest mysteries in this profession. Nevertheless, we have to demand it.
Okay. So you recognize it's not just Billy Moreland, but other agents are running into the same problem. Yeah, okay.
Derek just got off the phone with one of our other agents, turned in a full fact finder, except all the information's missing on the variable annuities. Okay. And we're doing an income plan. Well, how in the heck are we supposed to do an income plan, you know, take her pensions and her Social Security compared to a desired gross income, and then fill that gap, not knowing if those variable annuities have income riders themselves, whether we can replace those income riders with better ones from our products, or whether we need to use those income riders because they're better than what we can provide so that we can know how big that gap is, right?
Uh-huh.
And, well, the client doesn't want to give me that information. That's because you made it an option.
Right.
You know, I mean, the doctor doesn't make it an option. The accountant doesn't make it an option. The architect doesn't make it an option. You know, why do we make it an option? It's not an option. And from a profitability and case size and closure rate and reducing the number of appointments that it takes to close standpoint, just ask yourself this question. If I can't sell them on helping me do a full comprehensive fact finder, what chances do I have of selling them anything else?
Huh. Okay, that makes sense.
That's like trying to get my wife to marry me, but she won't let me take her out to dinner.
Okay.
Like, I mean, it's just one has to come before the other.
Right.
From the second standpoint, you know, just from the basic standpoint of it's your first sale, then you have another factor that goes into the fact-finding process, which is you need information from that fact-finder so that you can find the pain points to respond to with solutions, right? If you don't know what the problem is, how are you going to present a solution?
Probably not.
And the fact finder contains the pain points if you're looking for them, right? One of the fallacies of sales is that you provide a value proposition in of itself. And if you go around and buy anything, like if I go to the car dealership right now, I guarantee you there's about a 90% chance that the salesperson at that dealership is going to start telling me some feature of a car with the assumption that it's a value proposition to me before he even finds out what my problems and my desires and my needs are with regards to owning a vehicle. You know, like, oh man, this truck can pull 13,000 pounds. And he doesn't find out that I'm a hippie that, you know, lives in a tent down by the river, right? I mean, he's just trained to sell features of products without finding out what my needs are before he spills what they call spill your candy in the lobby, right? He's just basically got, he just throws up information into your lap without finding out whether his value proposition is going to be matched with a need and then therefore be a productive presentation of a value proposition. So the fact finder allows you to find those pain points. So when you're taking someone through a fact finder and you're saying, you know, what's your gross desired income before taxes? And, you know, how long are you going to work? How much is your income now? When are you going to work? And then you find the two Social Securities, and then you know that one of those is going to disappear if one of them die. And then you start talking about the pension and, you know, is there survivorship on this pension? How much? Is there COLA? And then you find out there's only 50% of the pension that's left. And then, you know, you add up all the income and it's $60,000 and they won $100,000. And then 30,000 of that is going to disappear when one of them dies. And now you know you got a spousal survivorship issue unless they have so much money that it's not a problem. But most of our clients, it's not enough money. They don't have enough money. So now you have a thing that is going to happen that you can create a value proposition for. You know, hey, what if we fill this gap of $40,000 on a lifetime guaranteed basis? Neither of you could ever outlive it. How would that make you feel?
Uh-huh.
How do we know to save $40,000? Well, we just did a fact finder, so we know what the gap is. How would that make you feel if you never had to worry about outliving $40,000? Well, that makes me feel good. Do you think that there's going to be inflation in this world? Yes. Yeah, I think there's going to be inflation. Do you know how much that inflation is going to be? No, not really, but you know, probably at least 2-3%. What if we could increase your income over the rest of your life so you're always getting raises? Now, when you guys worked, when you guys had a job, did you like getting raises? Yeah, we love getting raises. What if I gave you a raise every year? That way your spending power wouldn't be depleted as much as it would be otherwise if I gave you a raise each year. Oh, that'd be great. Okay, and then now I just want you to pay attention here. This is really important. I noticed that your pension's only 50% survivorship. Your Social Security is $24,000. Her Social Security is $12,000. If you die, Mr. Jones, you know that pension that you have, you know, $15,000 of that is going to go away, and then the lower of the two Social Securities will go away too. So for Mrs. Jones, that's $27,000 that's going to disappear off of her income. Matt, Mrs. Jones, how do you feel about knowing that $27,000 is going to disappear if Mr. Jones dies? Well, I don't like that at all. We should probably do something about that, don't you think? Yeah, that would be really good. Okay, so let me summarize this up. We've gone over all your income. We've looked at all the different sources of retirement savings you have. And let's just review this. Let's make sure you're correct. This is all correct, right? This is everything you got. I'm not going to use all your money. Don't be worried about that. But I need to know what's available so I can use whatever makes sense. This is all your money, right? Yes, this is all our money. Okay. So the next time we meet, we've agreed that you want an income for life, not an if-come plan that you don't know if it's going to be there, right? You know, I'm looking into both your eyes right now. You want to know that you will never outlive your money, correct? We've agreed upon that? Okay. We've agreed that you have to do something about inflation. Otherwise, your buying power will just get whittled away, and you know, the $100,000 that we're going to have you make today will be worth $50,000, you know, 15 to 17 years from now, correct? Okay. And then we need to do something about spousal survivorship. Obviously, neither of you can take a big hit if the other one dies, right? Okay, and just looking at your resources, I think we're in good shape. I think we should be able to do something towards all of these things. You know, we'll look at long-term care and things like that and address those issues as much as possible. But the main thing is income, inflation. Then if we can do something about long-term care, we'll do that. And then also if we can leave some money behind that's great. But, you know, a legacy is only as good as the last memory they have of you. And if their last memory is of you two struggling with your money, then it doesn't really matter what you leave behind, because they're going to remember that you struggled and that you were dependent on them. So let's leave them a legacy of your self-independence, and then we'll go ahead and, you know, try and make it so there's some money left behind too. Does that sound good? Yeah. So we've agreed upon that, correct? Okay, great. Next time we get together, I'm going to show you a solution to all those problems. Then you take that full comprehensive fact finder, you bring it to Derek. We put together case design for you. We use our software, the annuity income planning planner, the annuity income illustrator, and we come up with a comprehensive laddered inflation hedge, spousal survivorship design, all within the confines of the available resources of the client. That's where you have to be kind of intuitive, right? Because you don't want to oversell solutions that you can't deliver on because they haven't done their job and saved up enough money. So you have to get them to agree to the problems that you can solve, not the problems you can't solve.
Okay.
We come up with a solution. You go back and present the solution. Notice I haven't talked about an annuity yet. I haven't mentioned a product. I haven't explained how indexes work. I haven't, you know, mentioned annuities at all. Right? And in fact, if the client brings up annuities, I'm going to push back on him and say, you know what, it's too early to even talk about that. That I have to see what your problems are, come up with solutions, make sure the solutions work for you. Then I'll explain how we came up with the solutions. So step one, full fact finder. Step two, problem sale. You're selling them on a problem that has to be solved. You're getting them emotionally compromised for a problem. They need to feel it. They need to feel the pain of it. You have to paint the picture of the consequences, and they need to be emotionally compromised so that they'll be relieved when you show them the solution. On the third step, second appointment, you show them the solution. On that solution, and by the way, Derek will send you a recording of this, so you'll be able to go back through this. On that solution, you are going to paint the picture of a life with your problems solved. Think about how Tom Hegna presented annuities, right? Imagine your life. I mean, I'm doing my income plan right now, and like Tom Hegna's voice is just running through my head. I was leaning towards taking some of my money and putting it towards dividends to try and get some tax efficiency. And I keep on hearing Tom say, what if you never, you know, your income floor, what if you had an income floor you could never live below? Like, even though I do this every single day, the way he painted the picture, the way he got me to imagine about my life never having to worry about living below a certain amount of income still impacted me, even though this is what I do all the time.
Yeah.
You need to do that same, you know, imagine your life's explanation. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we've agreed. Let's just do a recap. This is the problems that we agreed upon that need to be solved. Okay? I'm going to show you the solutions to the problem. Now, I want you to imagine what your life would be like if these solutions are solved. I mean, I'm going to say some things that might sound a little dramatic, but I'm only telling you because this is real life and this actually happens. And this isn't a play on your emotions or anything without the basis of real life circumstances. But, you know, imagine, Mr. Jones, you find out you have a terminal illness. Doctor says you're going to live another 3 years. This terminal illness also somewhat incapacitates you. Imagine trying to fix the income problem during that. Mrs. Jones, imagine the stress of knowing that your husband's going to die, knowing that he took care of all the finances, knowing that you're going to lose income when he dies, and you're in your late 70s, there's really not much you can do about it. I mean, what are you going to do? Go back to work? You know, you had your money in the market crashed right before all this happened, banks froze up, you know, housing markets collapsed, you weren't even able to do a reverse mortgage because the lenders froze up. These are all possibilities. Will it happen? I don't know. All I know is I don't want you to be thinking about this in a circumstance like that, in a situation where you can't fix it. If we solve for your guaranteed income that lasts both of your lives, the only thing you'll have to think about in times like that is each other. And the only thing your family will have to think about during times like that is the family, because you won't have to think about money. And that is the legacy that you'll leave. So you guys ready to talk about the solution?
That's great. Love it.
Now either have them eating out of my hand at this point, or, you know, I have to check them for a pulse, right? So so now you present your solution. What is the solution? The solution is a numerical response to a numerical response to a numerical problem. It's not a product or a carrier. So when I show my income illustration, I'm going to show them the numerical solution that solves the problem. Then I'm going to get them to agree that that numerical solution solves the problem. So I'm going to say, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, you have $60,000 in income. You wanted 100. And see right here, I've filled that gap. Okay, you have at least $40,000 in additional income that's guaranteed for the rest of your lives. You'll also notice that this income increases because there's going to be some COLA adjustment from your Social Security. And then I've also included some solutions that will increase your income over time. Now, will this solve for inflation in totality? I don't know. I don't know what inflation is going to be. But I know that we got to do something about it. And so this will mitigate the negative effects of inflation. And then I'm going to show you something else after we're done going over how I came up with this income plan of how you can kick on some additional income if one of you dies to cover the problem of spousal survivorship. By the way, all these incomes here are designed to double if you have a long-term care event. 2 out of 6 adult ADLs, that income will double. So if I can show you how I came up with this income and you understand how I came up with it, because it's really important for me that you understand how I came up with this and that there's no confusion. But if I can show you how I came up with it, would you agree with me that this, what we see right here as far as filling the gap, would that provide you the income you need? And are you committed to having a lifetime income of this amount for the rest of your life? Well, I need to know how you came up with it. We're going to get to that. I need to know before I show you how I came up with it, if you agree that this is the solution, if I can explain how I came up with it and you can understand it. Yeah, that would cover it. Okay. Yes on the fact finder. Yes on the problem. Yes on the solution. I've done 3 closes already. I've got them to trust me with their information. I've got them to agree on a problem that they're emotionally compromised with. I've got them to agree on a numerical solution to the problem. 4th step, explain how you came up with that solution. That's the first time that the product is relevant. Okay, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, you can see right here, you're 50, right, age 50 right now. At age 65, you said you're going to retire. I'm showing you this amount of income at age 65. So the product I used for that is by this carrier, and here's the product name, and it has what's called an income rider. Here's the basic math of this income rider. Let me show you the illustration. It has an X percent bonus. It grows at X percent on a compounded basis for 15 years, and then it has a guaranteed joint payout percentage of X at your age 65. So if you take your premium, multiply it times the bonus, roll it up at the growth rate that is guaranteed and compounded, and then multiply that amount, which you can see right here is called the benefit base, by the percentage of payout on a joint basis for the rest of your lives, that's what provides you your income. Do you have any questions about that? No. Okay, great. Now, this income rider also comes with an account value. The account value is the money that you can pull out of in emergencies, or if you were to pass away, then this is the amount that would go to your beneficiaries. Okay. Now, we don't want to pull any money out of this policy, because if we do, we'll impact the income. And we're trying to create a guaranteed income plan that you can count on, right? So we're going to leave lots of money outside of this product for your liquidity. We're not going to use this product for emergencies. And if you terminated this product early, there would be early surrender charges plus 10% IRS penalties if you did it for 59 and a half. We're going to avoid all that because we're going to leave you with plenty of liquidity so you never have to do that. But it's important that you know what would happen if you did. Okay, now this account value is going to grow at an index rate. And that index is going to be tied to the stock market. If the stock market goes up, you can participate in that growth. If the stock market goes down, you don't participate in any of the losses. There's also going to be a small fee for the income rider that's deducted from this account. This is not your money. The money in the account value is not your money. The money in the account value belongs to your beneficiaries. Okay, it's a death benefit because you're going to use this product for income. So whatever money is left in this account value after you've taken income is what's going to go to your beneficiaries. The only thing you really need to be focused on is the income rider. Okay, now I've explained one product. If there's another product, I'm going to go on to the next product. Do you have any questions about that product or how the death benefit from the account value works? No? Okay, great. Let me go on to the next source of income and I'll explain that. And then you just bounce from product to product, going through the brochures, taking your big highlighter and highlighting the surrender fees, highlighting the bonus, highlighting the roll-up rates, highlighting the payout percentages. So, and then you're going to leave them with that brochure so that they have all the key components of those products highlighted. And then you're going to explain how you came up with the solution. Okay, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we've gone over the products that provide your solutions. Do you have any questions? Do you understand how we did that? Yes. Okay. So we've agreed that you enjoy the solution. You understand how the products. I guess at this point, really all we need to know is who you would like the money to go to if something was to happen to you, and we'll move forward. Mm-hmm. Step number five, that's the close. Mm-hmm. If they are not ready, they'll let you know. You don't need to worry about that, right? If they got lost along the way or they weren't as committed as they said they were, they will let you know at that point. What do you do when they want to not move forward? You say, okay, would you like me to go through this again? There's nothing to be embarrassed about. This is a super important decision. Sometimes I talk too fast. Really important for me to know that you understand. So how about if we go through this again? And then they might say, well, we kind of like to look over the information before we meet again, before we make a decision. Absolutely. Like I said, super important decision. There's no way you're moving forward until you understand. And I've done my job and explained everything. But just to confirm, you're still committed to the problem and the solution that we came up with, right? Do you have any questions about that? Is there any other money you didn't tell me about? Is there any, errors in the information we've gathered that would change this situation? No embarrassment. Let me know. No, it's all correct. I just, I'd like to read over the brochures and everything like that. Great. Okay. I'm going to be in your area again next Tuesday at the same time. You want to meet then? And I'll go over the whole thing with you again when we meet. Okay, that'd be great. We'll meet next Tuesday. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to put a notepad and a pen. And if you want to get really clever, you can make notepads and then put your logo on it and your contact information and then hand them a notepad and hand them a pen. Say, okay, I want you to take this notepad. I want you to take this pen. All of your important thoughts tend to happen as you lay down to sleep. Okay, all your concerns and your anxieties and things like that, for whatever reason, they tend to happen when you lay down to sleep. And so I want you to take the notepad and pen. I want you to put it on your nightstand. I want you to write down every single question you come up with between now and next Tuesday. we are going to meet, and I'm going to answer every single question you come up with. You're going to be 100% confident in the information that we went over here. And this is no pressure for you to make a decision at that time. It's just I need to know that you know the information and are comfortable with it. I'm going to give you this book. You know, if you get a chance, please read it. Some very important information there. If it's a Tom Hegna book, even better. Yeah. But, you know, I'm going to give you this book. I want you to read it. I want you to go over this. You know, here's a safe money kit. It's got a bunch of information in there. I just want to point out one particular piece of information that is really important. I know your money's with Fidelity right now. So I'd like to go over something called how to divorce your broker or your accountant or whatever. It's very consistent. If you tell someone that has your money that is making money off of your money, whether your money goes up or down, they are going to start to think it's their money. I would like to go over some of the things that they might say and what you should know is the correct answer to those objections. And then I'm going to go through that handout that's on our safe money kit. And then you're going to meet with them again. And then if they don't have an objection, you're going to close, you know, to close policy. You get good enough at this and start doing your own case design. You can actually do your case design right in front of the client. Kind of high level. You need to have internet access. You got to know your products really well. You got to work quickly because you can't have like 7-hour appointments. But it is possible, and I've seen agents close business on the first appointment, especially if it's a single person, because then you don't have to worry about joint survivorship. I mean, sometimes some of the cases are just super simple. You know, they make X, they want Y, and they have just the amount of money they need to have at the age that they're going to retire, and it takes one product, solution done, sold. So you can actually do this in one appointment, but I would not encourage you to do that. I'd get good at doing it in two appointments and then work from there. Utilize us for case design and illustration and things like that. And, you'll see your case. If you follow this process every time, case size goes up, closure rates go up, the number of appointments it takes to close goes down. It'll just happen. The process will allow you to improve your sales just by itself. And then as you do this more, you'll get better at objection handling. It's important to, you know, the other component of this, and you'll find this consistently with all the top salespeople, is that they have a catalog in their head that they've built up over time. If someone says this, I say this. And they build up that catalog, and they know how to use their objection handling. And like Tom Hegna said, the best way to objection handle is to handle the objection before it becomes an objection. So as you build up that catalog, you start anticipating the objections and handling before they happen. But the number one way to handle objections is to get someone to agree to a problem and a solution.
Yeah.
Objections are a rampant consequence of product selling because you're giving them features of a product rather than benefits of how they can solve a problem in their lives. And that makes objection handling go off the...
Can you speak to what you do to guard against inflation?
So inflation is going to be done through laddering of annuities, right? So, and it could, actually, let me make it more simple. Inflation is done through laddering of income of all types. So, for example, one of the ways that I could tackle inflation is to get them to delay their Social Security, right? If I can provide income early, that allows them to delay their Social Security and turn on their Social Security later, they're going to have more income. Therefore, they're going to have a bigger impact against inflation. here's another way to attack inflation. Not that you're changing their financial future, but you're recognizing opportunities to ladder through your fact finder. So for example, when was the last time you asked someone that had a mortgage on their house when it was going to be paid off? So the client says, I need $100,000 in income. Okay, great. We'll work on that. Do you have a mortgage on your home? Yes, I do. How much is that mortgage? Oh, it's about $1,000 a month. Okay, so $12,000 a year. When are you supposed to have that paid off? I'm supposed to have it paid off in 10 years. Okay, and you said you're going to retire at age 65, and you're 55 right now. So that means that this house is going to be paid off. You're 60 years old now. You're going to retire at age 65, and this house is going to be paid off in 10 years. Okay, so you'll be age 70. Okay, and are you going to buy another house at that time, or are you going to live in this one? You're not going to upgrade to a bigger house, are you? No. I mean, if we do move into another house, it's going to be the same size. We'll just use the cash from this house to buy another house. Okay, so you're going to have a reduction in expenses of $12,000 in 10 years. Yeah, that's correct. So can we take your $100,000 desired income, which is the desired income you have right now, and can we change that to $88,000 at age 70? Yeah, because, I mean, we're not going to buy another house. Okay, great. Well, you just created a ladder. Every time someone has a reduction in expenses, it's equivalent to a tax-free raise. Right? Maybe they're paying for their grandkids' college or something like that. So the more you find out in the fact finder, the more opportunity you find to discover laddering opportunities through reductions in taxes or changes in lifestyle or things like that. So if you get specific on their expenses and you know, when those are going to start and when they're going to end and things like that, then you're able to create ladders.
Example right there, how would you display that? Would you display that on the income illustrator? Right?
Yeah. So I would in the income planner, I would display that as a reduction in desired income before taxes.
Got it. Okay.
So now inflation is going to erode away that reduction in expenses, right? But we're still acknowledging that that there'll be an effective increase in their income based on a reduction in expenses. On an annuity basis, you know, probably one of my favorite ways to inflation hedge is to take, you know, say the Athene Agility or the American Equity Estate Shield or the Allianz 222 or the Allianz Balanced Allocation Annuity. And what I'll do is, to take out income early, I'll use 10% penalty-free withdrawals because it's 10%. All of those products allow you to take 10% of premium. So, for example, if someone needs $100,000 a year in income over and above everything else they have, I know if I put $1 million into the Athene Agility, I can pull out $100,000 a year, every single year, because it's 10% of premium. If I put in $1 million, I can always take, yeah. So, and that's guaranteed income because I'm guaranteed to be able to pull out $100,000.
Yep.
Then what I'll do to replace that penalty-free withdrawal, I'll take, you know, probably it's going to be somewhere around, say, $1.3 million, or actually it's not even going to be that much. It might be like $800,000, and put it in the highest guaranteed income in 10 years. So I'll defer $800,000 for 10 years and then turn on income in year 11. And then I'll also turn on income on the Agility, which is probably going to be, in a case like that, $20,000, something like that. But yeah, the way the Agility works is the Agility increases the income at 175% of the index rate. And so you'll have an increasing income stacked on top of a guaranteed income. At no time is it less than $100,000. You know, but you could do it other ways too. You could, you know, you could just, you know, how much income do you need in 5 years? Solve for that. Okay, well, I'm going to take half of that and defer it for 10 years. And then I'm going to take half of that and defer it for 15 years. And I'm going to take half of that and defer it for 20 years. And then just create these little
inflation jumps. When you get into cases where they're just not getting it and it's quite sophisticated and explaining how the agility works, at what point do you risk losing the sale because it's too complex versus doing something that benefits them? You follow me? Because that agility product
is
sometimes.
Well, once again, this is where the fact finder comes in, because the fact finder process in itself is a process that requires critical thinking and the ability to observe people's responses to specific and detailed questions, right? So as I'm taking someone through a fact finder, if that process becomes extremely painful, you know, like I want to stick needles in my fingernails rather than doing this, I am not going to use a complex solution for that client. I'm going to try and find the simplest solution for that client. You know, if they don't know anything about what's going on in their current finances, it's going to be really hard for me to present a complicated solution and get them to understand it. So the fact finder process is a chance to sell the problem. It's a chance to gather all the information so you can find problems. It's a chance to read body language. You know, like you say, hey, would you guys want to lose some of your money, all your money, or none of your money? And then you're watching the two of them and looking at their physiological response to that question. The wife is like, no, I don't want to lose any money. Husband's like, I think we're fine. And then you see that and you respond to it. You say, Mrs. Jones, I'm not saying one right answer is right or another is wrong, but how do you feel about the fact that Mr. Jones is more confident about this than you are? Mr. Jones, how do you feel about the fact that she's less confident about this than you are? Do you think we could meet someplace in the middle? I mean, we're kind of premature here. I haven't showed you any solutions to any problems we're going to talk about, but I just want to kind of know going forward, where are we on this? Are we going to, go all one direction and not the other, or can we try and make Mrs. Jones happy and you happy at the same time?
Okay.
You know, so the fact finder is such a huge opportunity to unveil all kinds of information. And the deeper you get into the fact finder, the more the client is submitted to the process.
Right. Okay. Real quick, on those five sales process steps, fact finder, number one, number two, problem selling, number three, solution selling, have them agree to a numerical solution to the problem. What was number four again?
The product sale, or more specifically, the product explanation. How did I come up with the solution?
Okay. Got it.
And then the fifth would be the close.
The close, moving into who do you want to leave the balance to? It's not.
Yeah, so the close, if all the other steps go well, which they won't always do, but if all, you know, we're baseball players, you know, if sometimes we get on base, sometimes we hit a home run, you know, if we hit the ball one out of every four times, everybody knows our name.
Yeah.
So, you know, if all the previous four steps go well, then the close becomes almost non-existent because you've already closed them many times.
Okay, real good. Got it. I like that. Okay, I'll start hammering the fact finder. You know, a lot of times with these leads that come in, especially the non-radio leads, you know, financialize or whatever, they know it's about annuities up front. Okay. So that's a little bit different dynamic. But still, I'm trying not to just pitch a product or, you know, the play is to move into the fact finder in all cases. You know, I've got a guy who's back by 1 o'clock, about 15, you know, by, in 15 minutes, I've got a call back. Actually, this was a radio lead. He's single, he's retired. you know, he's instantly asking me about interest rates and what can you do, and I'm trying to take it away from him. So I'm gonna just, if he's not willing to be the fact finder, I'm gonna probably punt on this one. So
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's important. You know, I'll wrap up real quick here, but if you don't mind, I'm gonna use this for other agents to listen to, because I think it's
sure.
The flow went real well, and I think it'll be valuable. But you know, this is why it's important to get in front of people whenever you can. And then it's also why a sales process is even more important when you can't get in front of people, right? Because when you can't get in front of people, the ability and the need to compel people emotionally is even more important because of the physical separation. So yeah, that's where you rely on your sales process even more. And that's even where you have to, you know, I call it kind of like go to stage, where, you know, every time you're presenting, you got to think of yourself as, you know, walking to a theater, you know, that's got 5,000 seats, and you're trying to not just compel the people in the first row, you're trying to compel the people in the back row. So what do? Your makeup is probably a quarter inch thick. You're talking about five times as loud as you normally do. Your body language and everything is way more exaggerated than it would be in normal life, because you're trying to reach that person in the back seats over there. And when you get to a virtual sales process, it's just like that. Your enthusiasm, your compassion, your process, and everything has to be even sharper. Now, let me just say one quick thing, because I know anybody listening to this, they're going to be like, well, my client doesn't need income. Well, we closed a $5 million case, cash with app, on a client that had $15 million, and we did it through a process of just like Tom Magna talks about, convincing them that they needed a income floor, painting the picture of what it would be like to never have less than $300,000 for the rest of him and his wife's life. And he took $5 million of his $15 million and bought an income floor that he could never live beyond, so that the $10 million that we left outside of the plan, he could do whatever he wanted with impunity. If he lost it all, he would still have enough income to live on for the rest of his life. So first, don't dismiss just because someone says they don't need income, or you look at their situation and you think they don't need income, don't dismiss the potential emotional impact of having an income floor and your ability to sell to that emotion, because that is what drives case size and closure rate. Now, if I do have a client that's got all the income they need, their desired gross income is $100,000 a year, they got $80,000 coming in from pension, full survivorship, between the two Social Securities, they got another $60,000, plus they own a couple rental properties that produces $30,000 a year, which is going to have some inflation hedging in it, and they have a dividend portfolio of $1 million that brings in about $30,000 a year in dividends, then obviously they don't need an income floor, right? I mean, they have enough guaranteed income, or income that's quasi-guaranteed, that they don't need an income floor. Then you're still going to have to come up with a way to sell a five-step sales process. You know, I mean, it's still the same thing. You're just going to have to appeal to other pain points. If you go through the fact finder and you can't find a pain point, know that your potential for closing business is deteriorating. So what is that pain point going to be? Well, maybe it's life insurance. You know, maybe it's legacy. Maybe it's long-term care. Maybe it's just not having to look at CNBC anymore. And, you know, hey, you have enough income coming in. Do you want to have to watch the rest of your income, rest of your money, or would you rather watch your golf game? You know, retain and gain. You have to find a value proposition. You know, maybe they need a little income, but not much. So it really doesn't need to be guaranteed. So you just do a growth product with a spend down, with the value propositions of retain and gain and not having to watch the market each day. Whatever it is, you have to find a value proposition that meets a need. And the reason why I bring up income is because it is the biggest fear that people have on average is running out of income for the die. So that's the center of the target about 80% of the time. And the pushback I always get from agents is they try and make the 20% the 80%. And a lot of that is really just lack of confidence in a process to be able to sell the 80%. Or laziness, or, you know, a million other things that causes us not to do the things we're supposed to do. But the center of the target is income almost all the time. And then when it's not the center of the target, you've got to find the center of the target. So the fact-finding process will let you know, hey, the center of the target is income here. Even when the client's got $15 million, because through that fact-finding process, you're going to be selling the problem and seeing how the client responds to it. And if you can tell your client's becoming emotionally compromised with the problem, then you know you can continue on that course. If you see that it's not having any impact on them at all, you have to find another way in.
Very good.
Okay, buddy. Well, you have a great appointment. And let me know if you need anything else. We're always here for you.
Oh, yeah, sure will. Appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
All parties have disconnected the line.